We have got Don Moore in the studio with us today for the Monday afternoon show. Don Moore, if you don't already know, is the Common Council president. We've been thinking about having Don on here regularly to let us know a little bit more about what is going on, what is on the Common Council's agenda. Try to get him in here before the informal meeting of the Common Council each month so listeners can be aware of what's going on in those meetings and to understand a little bit more about what's going on in the city. So hi, Don.
Hi. Well, glad to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you in here. I wanted to just start right off the bat, but if you could give us a little bit, for someone listening who doesn't even know what the Common Council is, if you could explain the sort of really, really 101 infrastructure and some of the sort of monthly procedures, how it all works.
Sure. The Common Council is made up of 11 people, 10 aldermen and one Common Council president. The 10 aldermen are because there are five wards in the city, and each ward elects two aldermen. These elections take place every 2 years. As the city council president, I am one of three citywide elected officials, the mayor, the common council president, and the treasurer. As the common council president, it's my job basically to manage the council. I do have a vote. I have a weighted vote the way all the others do, different weighted votes, but I'm not simply the presiding officer. I actually can vote. The council is then made up of committees. The principal committees are legal and finance, but there are also arts, entertainment, and tourism, police committee, a fire committee, youth and aging committee, public works committees, and an economic development committee. And my job is to both set the membership of those committees, in other words, talk to each of the individual aldermen at the beginning of the session and determine where their interests are, where their abilities are, and to have them serve on those committees. The committees all meet once a month, and the council meets twice a month, to your earlier point. There is a formal council meeting and an informal council meeting. According to the city charter, the formal council meeting occurs on the third Tuesday of every month. The informal meeting happens on the Monday of the week preceding. That sometimes gets a little confusing because people think that the date of the day of the informal meeting is set in advance. It's not. The formal meeting is generally speaking where the council takes action on resolutions or local laws. The informal meeting is where resolutions, bills, laws are introduced and where there's somewhat wider discussion of the issues. In other words, if you're going to introduce a bill, you want to have either a report from a committee or some wider discussion amongst the aldermen or with the attending audience. And the last thing I'd like to say is that I'm really glad that you're doing this because I do think that participation is the lifeblood of democracy. And having more people know about what's on the agenda and coming out to express themselves is welcome, very welcome from my point of view.
Well, so sort of on that note, are the meetings open to the public? Are the agendas posted? Are minutes posted? And where?
Right. Good question. The agendas are published generally speaking, the day of the meeting. We are a relatively small staff, but posted by the clerk on the lovely Hudson City website. And what you will find there and is not simply a calendar that tells you the dates of all of the meetings. You don't have to remember that it's this, the third Tuesday or the Monday preceding, because there indeed is a calendar on the Hudson City website that has all of those dates, as well as the dates and times for the various committees. But thanks to the New York State Legislature, and I do mean this, all government governing bodies, whether it's an elected body or a nonprofit organization, are now required to post online the documents that will actually be considered by at their next meeting. So that if we are introducing a piece of legislation, we have to actually have that paper available.
And at what time does it have to be available?
Generally speaking, it's late in the day. We try to get them up, but sooner than that. But this law was just put into effect, and so we're still sort of working out the kinks of who's going to do it and how quickly we can get everything together. Because generally speaking, it's unfortunately with a small city and a small staff, we tend to get everything together at the last minute. I mean, virtually everybody in the city government is part time. The meetings are all open, unless they are specifically described as an executive session. And there are really fairly rigid rules under state law about what is or what can and cannot be within an executive session. So it's very rare when that happens. Otherwise, everything is open.
Well, so for example, tomorrow is the formal meeting of the Common Council.
Correct.
And so what will be on the agenda? What will you guys be taking action on tomorrow?
Very specifically, we have a local law. We have two local laws and two resolutions. Resolutions may have the effect of law, but a local law takes a little bit has a little more involved process. So we're approving a local law tomorrow, or we'll take a vote on a local law tomorrow that has already been introduced and considered to stiffen the penalties for allowing dogs to defecate without being cleaned up. We're calling it the pooping law, and a number of people have come forward and said that there's just beginning to be a much greater problem, particularly in the Central Business District, with people not cleaning up after their dogs. So the penalties will be increased for first, second, third, fourth offenses. We'll also introduce, although we won't act on tomorrow, a bill to ban smoking in public parks. We already ban smoking in public buildings. There is considerable evidence that secondhand smoking is particularly damaging, and so the city is going to act. I hope, and I stick my neck out here and say that I really do hope that this passes, to ban smoking in public parks. This also has the support of the mayor. Then we also have two resolutions, small things. One that has to do with some administrative responsibilities of the clerk, and another has to do with approving what are called commissioners of deeds. A commissioner of deeds is somewhat like a notary public and can sign, formally witness documents and signatures within the city of Hudson. And people can apply for that authority, and the city council passes a resolution to approve their being taking on that responsibility, and then it's ratified by the county clerk.
Well, so using the anti-smoking laws, the bill that's being introduced tomorrow, where does that go? Just kind of pairing that with the conversation we were just having about the procedures, when a bill gets introduced, what happens to it next? What is its lifespan?
The bill went to the legal committee. It is a law. Generally speaking, any bill or resolution that changes local law goes to our legal committee. The legal committee considered this and approved it to be taken up by the full council. It's been through the committee. It's being introduced. Rules have exceptions. We were going to introduce the anti-smoking legislation at the last meeting. There were a couple of proofreading adjustments that need to be made, so we were going to introduce it at the formal meeting. But we did have a discussion about it at the informal meeting 8 days ago. So it's that's generally the way things go, is that we have a discussion with the city legal advisor, we have a discussion with the mayor, we have it within the legal committee, and a formal action is taken by the legal committee to pass a piece of legislation forward to the full council, and then the council has the final vote.
Can I ask you a few questions about some business that isn't on the agenda necessarily for tomorrow night?
Anything you like.
All right. Well, there was one item that's been in the news in the Register Star, and here I see it under the City of Hudson website under your news, mentions that the Fugari Boat Club, a.k.a. North Dock Tin Boat Association, Inc., located within the City of Hudson, and more particularly described in the letters patent, and then it mentions that these people have to vacate from their property. So I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of a background on the Fugari Boat Club, what's going to happen now, how long they have to vacate, and I'm curious if the city has any plans for that property.
The club, the Fugari, that group of houses has been down there for, I don't know, 60 or 70 years, some long time. It never became an issue for the city until, indeed, the city came to own the property, which it sort of backed into. A couple of years ago, when the city was in the throes of designing the new wastewater treatment plant down by the river that's adjacent to the Fugari property, the designers needed more property than the city had. The Fugari was owned by the state. The city approached the state. The state said, sure, you can have it. Traded us that parcel that's called the Fugari for 6 acres of lands underwater, which is land along the shoreline. and the city took possession. Almost immediately, the State Department of Environmental Conservation turned around and sued the city because the Frigari shacks had no sanitation, they have no running water, they have observed no health standards. And that, in effect, sort of triggered the city's action to terminate the shack at the waterfront. There was legal action taken. The Frigari members had an attorney. They sued a couple of times, took it to the state Supreme Court. The state Supreme Court upheld the lower court decision. And the city has now given the, I guess, owners of the shacks 30 days to vacate before the city takes formal possession of the land. Now, I think this is somewhat unfortunate. On the other hand, there are, I think, real issues of fairness, and the owners of that property pay no taxes. They pay no water and sewer fees. The roads are, you know, not part of the city system, and it's the sort of thing that you have to say, well, yes, but wouldn't we all like that? And I'd like to opt out of paying property taxes whenever I'd like. And the city, I think the city too has grown and expanded. And as far as so that the point that once where those shacks may have been sort of outliers in the middle of, you know, a not well developed land, indeed, today that's not the case. We have a substantial parkland and land use development plan that's been designed by the Columbia Land Conservancy to create a parkland from basically Dock Street, which is the sort of the northern edge of the city, beyond the wastewater treatment plant up into the Greenport Conservancy, to make that contiguous parkland all the way up. And part of that would be to determine whether or not there are any recreational uses as well as the ecological and study uses of the North Bay. And the only access that in Hudson to the North Bay is really the south end of the North Bay, which is where the Frigari properties surround. And so there is no access to the North Bay by anyone other than them.
Do you have any sense of how many people down there are impacted by the decision?
I don't. Who does or doesn't, you know, hold some ownership to those properties has always been a little murky, as far as I'm concerned. And I think that as far as the other people in the city administration are concerned, there is a somebody knows somebody, but you know who's really been behind the lawsuit and where the money came from, and who is the Tin Boat Association. It's not really clear. I mean, I looked at a Google Earth a couple of week or so ago, you know, and there appear to be something in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 shacks down there. I couldn't tell you more about the population than that.
It does seem like that whole conversation around the Frigari Boat Club is so characterized by a sort of protective nature around the community down there and privacy there. And I'm wondering how that has affected the city's process in dealing with residents down there.
The owners, call them what you will down there, mm-hmm. have established a perimeter. They have established some sense that they have the ability to keep other people off of that property. And that's generally been, I think, accepted within the city. When the Department of Environmental Conservation decides it wants to sue you because you're not in compliance with state health or environmental laws, it costs. I mean, there are fees that were to be attached to that if the city didn't take action, as well as the other issues of lost tax revenue and sanitation and the effect of the fact that, you know, that we have that many individuals and or properties that are simply, you know, dumping their waste into the North Bay. And however, unfortunate it may be that these folks have been down there for this length of time and left relatively alone, how unfortunate it may be that that's changed. I think that the city doesn't bear the sole responsibility for the fact that a change was not anticipated by those folks. I mean, they do bear a responsibility themselves for the fact that, indeed, you know, there are certain things in the wind that, you know, were particularly once the city was kind of backed into owning the property.
Well, the other thing that we were hoping to ask you while we had you in here that is, again, not on tomorrow's agenda, but part of what is going on in the city right now has to do with the Galvin Foundation's proposal for the building that would potentially house long-term supportive housing and also the police station and court. And wondering if you could give us a sense of where that is.
Well, it was bound to be a long process anyway, and it seems as if it's going to be an even longer process. And the reason I say that is that there needed to be a plan for the building, and the initial plan was to have to provide a new home for both the Hudson City Police Department and for the Hudson City Courts. And then the Galvin Foundation came along with this proposal that would include 35 units of supportive long-term housing. But it's been controversial within the city, as both from residents and also from the Hudson City Police Department, who were not happy about being placed in a building with the homeless. The financing, the building as it was initially designed and proposed, would cost something in excess of $10 million. Now, at least half of that would, in order to make the financing work for this particular plan, would have had to come in the form of loans and tax credits from a state office called HHAP, Homeless Housing Assistance Program. Now, they have, I gather, expressed some concern about the opposition within the city, and so that when the Galvin Foundation took the proposal to the Hudson City Planning Commission, the police and the courts were not a part of that design, and I know that the Planning Commission has expressed some caution in proceeding with a building that is that's this complicated, just from a planning point of view. Now back to the council. When the plan first came forward, there were extensive discussions with the mayor, with the Galvin Foundation people about the proposal and how it would work and what the nature of the city's commitment could or could not be at this point. And we negotiated with the foundation a resolution that said that we are in general in support of the concept of going forward to see determine whether or not financing could be obtained for it, at the same time that we were going to look somewhat more rigorously, as the Planning Commission is, but probably on a somewhat wider basis than they are, at the character of the building. You know, what is it or isn't it a good thing for the city and or for the population of for whom the permanent supportive housing is designed. You know, one of the factors in this is that the HHAP, as I say, the Homeless Housing Assistance Program, wants a 30-year commitment. If they're going to provide financing, that means that we have to have a building that's going to that has that kind of permanence to it. There's also the question of the services to the individuals who would be housed there, because this is not simply public housing. This is housing for individuals who really have, in the main, do not have the ability to live on their own and who need social services and case management on a fairly intensive and regular and ongoing basis. So it's that's also a part of the issues that need to be addressed in whether or not that project actually moves forward to actually being built.
Were you insinuating there that in terms of alternate models that were potentially going to be in place, where you would have the Columbia Memorial Hospital putting walk-ins in the first floor as opposed to having the police in court, or is that something
I have heard, although I have not heard it directly from Galvin representatives, that an alternative is to have a walk-in clinic included in the building. I don't know whether that would be one or both floors. I have heard independently of this particular proposal that Columbia Memorial Hospital was looking for a site for a walk-in facility within the city. You know, they're tight for space. They, you know, a good deal of the people who are serviced by their emergency room are from the city. They've done this in other places around Columbia and Greene County. where they've established walk-in centers, and they wanted to put, and they were looking to put one in the city, so that it doesn't. It certainly fits that the foundation, that the Galvin Foundation sought them out on this. I don't know anything more about the, you know, how far those conversations have gone.
Well, Don, I want to thank you for coming on to the show and talking about city business. If people want to attend the meetings tomorrow night, for example.
The city meetings are always at City Hall, whether it's a committee meeting or whether it's the common council meetings, the formal meetings or the informal meetings. Again, the council meetings are always at 7 o'clock, but it is relatively easy just to go on the cityofhudson.org website, look at the calendar, you've got the calendar, and you'll see the both the dates and the times for all of the meetings. And as I say, they're all open unless, you know, the rare occasion that they're not.
Well, and Don mentioned earlier, if people are just tuning in, we've got Don Moore, the Common Council President for the City of Hudson, in the studio with us. And Don earlier mentioned participation, and I think you said it was the lifeblood of democracy. Was that?
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
Something like that. We also do encourage people to participate here. We're going to try to have Don on here monthly on the Monday afternoon show. People can also call in or email in advance of the show and let us know if there's something that they'd like us to bring up. You can email us at info@wgxc.org. You can also call us at 518-828-0290. And Melinda, Noah, and I are in the studio every Monday. Mm-hmm. I will say, backtracking a little bit about the anti-pooping law, I was once walking a dog in the city of Hudson, a dog that wasn't mine, it was a friend's dog, and I have never been in a situation like this where the dog pooped four times, and I had left pretty prepared to be a diligent dog walker, but the fourth time around I had run out of materials, and so I left to go find a plastic bag, and I was stopped on the street by, like, I want to say 5 or 6 different people who said, you can't leave that there. Are you serious? We've got some citizen law and yeah, some.
I'm delighted to hear it.
I was like, I'm not a dog owner. I didn't know that it could happen like this.
those of us who are dog owners, you always have this great fear of, am I leaving the house with enough bags? It's a constant source of tension.
Well, Don, thank you so much. We will see you tomorrow at the meeting.
It's a pleasure to have been with you. Thank you.
Thank you.